One, I am going to do just two verses. That makes no promises on the length of a sermon, but we will do the first two verses just to kind of give a vision and a context and a layout for the entire series. Should not be surprising to anybody that there's different opinions on what's even going on in Genesis chapter 1, verses 1 to 2. Some people think it's just like the title, like, hey, in the beginning, God created the heavens and earth. And then the rest of the chapter is like, this is how that happened. Some people think it's like, no, this is him actually creating the heavens and earth. And then the rest of the chapter is him filling that out. So there's different opinions on that. And we'll get into some of that. Even next Sunday night, we'll get into that. So, but let me read Genesis 1. 1 to 2, and then we'll dive in. It says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. It says, the earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. What we're going to see, and it starts with in the beginning, is this series in Genesis 1 through 11. It's the history of the world. Some they call it the primeval age, which I always thought that sounded like scary. Doesn't primeval sound scary? So I looked it up, and it means just the earliest ages of history, the earliest ages of the world. That's why we're calling the series Creation and Chaos itself our origin story. This is our origin. This is the story of creation. We'll look and see the story of humanity. We'll see the story of Sabbath and rest. We'll see the story of work. We'll see the story of marriage and family. We'll see the story of sin and shame, of grace and worship. And so this is reveals the beginning, the story of God. And the story that we find ourselves in, and you probably notice this, and you can start seeing everything around you through this light. It's one of creation and beauty and goodness, and also of chaos and destruction and pain. We had our some really good friends in from Chicago, and Monday morning, they really wanted to go snorkeling. We were telling them about Phil Foster Park and then there. And so the kind of high tide was early Monday morning. I was like, hey, if you guys want to wake up, I'll take you down there. This will be a good week to start a creation series, a good way to start the week, to be actually in creation. And then so we're snorkeling. And then my head's under. There's the first reef we went to is super blue water, super clear. There was fish everywhere. There's these angelfish and... what are my favorite ones, Karina, the bigger ones? What is it? The parrotfish. I love parrotfish. There's like tons of parrotfish. And so I'm just down there and I'm like, oh, look at God's creation, his beauty. He's filled the waters and all this stuff. And then I immediately pick my head up and there is like ambulances and fire trucks and all these like just complete chaos going out over the bridge that we're swimming under. And at the same time, so it's like we see this beauty and then we see this pain and hurt and destruction and devastation in our world. And all these things go on at the same time. Fast forward later in the week, I was doing sermon prep and reading and researching. And what I like to do is kind of read, research, and then I go for like a bike ride. Bike ride's kind of like a lazy person's exercise because like, you got to work, but not that hard. Like running, like if you just stop doing it, you just stop. Bike riding, you can just like stop pedaling for a while and you just keep on going, right? So I like bike riding. But it allows me to think while I do it. So I'm out riding my bike and I ride up to Jonathan Dickinson Park and I'm just like processing and praying about all the stuff I'm reading in there. And then I pull back into my neighborhood and I happen to pull right behind a garbage truck. And so the end of my bike ride was in the midst, in the sort of the waif of waste management thing. It was awful. But it's just, again, creation, beauty, like doing something and experiencing God and everything. And then there's just something that taints it. There's something that sabotages it. It's the world that we live in. And this is what we see in the story of Genesis. It's what we see in the storyline of scriptures, that God created everything good in Genesis 1 and 2. And then sin enters the world. There's rebellion against God. There's a brokenness. There's a pain, there's a suffering, there's a separation between God and people and one another. Even it says that creation groans because of the effects of sin in our world. And so what we see in Genesis 1 through 11 and then through all of scriptures is the story of God. G.K. Chesterton has a favorite quote. He says, famous quote. I don't know if it was one of his favorites or not. He says, this world of ours has some purpose. And he says, if there is a purpose, there is a person. He said, I always felt that life first as a story. And if there is a story, there is a storyteller. If you can understand and see and view our world as a story we find ourselves in, that there has to be a storyteller. Theologian C. John Collins. I also told Alex, like, I guess if you get quoted this week, you have to be smart, and you know you're smart when you just have initials for your name, right? So C. John Collins, he's an Old Testament professor at Covenant Seminary in St. Louis. He says, the vehicle that God has chosen to convey this view of life and the world is narrative. We understand the world, we understand our lives best through stories. Collins went on to say that as Westerners, we might appreciate more of a systematic or a scientific explanation of the world. But we don't remember facts. We aren't moved by facts. They're just facts. Nothing moves us, nothing changes us, but stories do. We learn, we remember, we experience awe, and we are captivated by stories. This is what you do as parents. What do you do from the time your kids are little? You read them stories, right? We learn through stories. We learn lessons. I was I'm always a perennial assistant coach, but I sometimes will coach intramurals to a certain age, and I'll be the head coach. So I intramural soccer coach here at Jupiter Christian for like 8-year-olds and under. That's like my limit. And we entitled the Florida Flossers the best name, and we flossed after the goals, and I gave out floss at the end of the season for their contribution. But somehow my kids were on it, and they got fascinated by me telling stories of how I got hurt growing up. And they were all like wildly entertained by these stories, but these were lessons of things basically not to do in life. And I would just tell them these stories, and every week it would be like, hey, what's the next story of what you did? I was like, well, my kids were like, tell them about the ones that you passed out by the soda machine and threw up all the gummy bears while you're playing mini golf from heat exhaustion. Or when you tried to jump over the tennis court on your rollerblades, but the line was still going across and you landed on your head and you tried to fight the ambulance driver. They're like, tell them these stories, right? They wanted to learn. They wanted to learn what not to do. We learn lessons through stories. If you want to get to know somebody, what do you do? You sit down and you say, hey, tell me your story. I was talking to Callie Beth. We had a great coffee this week with her and Karina, and we just kind of sat down like, tell me how you ended up down here. What's the story? How did it happen? That's how we get to know people. So it makes sense that if we want to understand God and the world we live in, he would communicate it through a story. And what we'll see in understanding God's great story, it makes sense of our smaller stories. It makes sense of the world that we find ourselves in. It makes sense of the challenges that we have. It makes sense of the desires that we have, the longings that we have, the hope that we have. And so the call is to understand this great story. And that's how Genesis 1 starts. It starts with the story. It starts with, like every other story starts, in the beginning. Genesis, that's the name. They would name a book by whatever the first word is. And the first word is beginnings. It means Genesis or origins. And what we see in this story of in the beginning is the story is written to. We'll see who it is from. And then finally, what's its purpose? And so to understand, and Paul will get into this more, Genesis, it was written to a particular people. It was written to the Israelites God had delivered them from slavery into Egypt. Maybe you've heard of the story of the Exodus. God had delivered his people from slavery to Pharaoh, and they were living in this Exodus. They call it the wilderness days. And they had this period where they had been delivered from slavery, but prior to entering the promised land. So they're living in this time period, and Genesis was written, and really the whole Pentateuch was written to provide encouragement as they faced the challenges of life. They faced the challenges of separating from their background of their slavery in Egypt. They it's written to provide in an encouragement in a time where God seemed to be defeated. All the cultures around them, they served many gods, and they seemed to have all the power, and they seemed to have all the authority, and they seemed to have all the stuff. They were wandering around the desert, and a lot of their hearts, a lot of their minds, they're like, what did you do to us, Moses? We want to go back to Egypt. It was better being a slave than living in this desert. What did you have us do? They appeared to have nothing. So it was written to the people of God as they're traveling through the wilderness. Walter Brueggemann says, against such claims that God had been defeated, that they appeared to have nothing, Brueggemann says, against such claims, it is here asserted that Yahweh is still God, that Yahweh is one who watches over his creation and will bring it to its well-being. In the midst of their questions, in the midst of their confusion, in the midst of saying, God, where are you? He writes to encourage them that God is still God, that he's still in control of his creation, and his purposes will come about. And we face the same things. We face the same doubts. We have the same questions. We have the suffering. We have the illness. We have questions on, God, will you provide for me? Remember, what are they grumbling about in the desert? God, we need food. And what does God do? He's like, no, I gave you manna from heaven. They're like, yeah, but it goes bad if we try and collect it, right? They're worried about provision. There's relational strife that they experience. They were lonely. They were isolated. They were confused, just like we are. We ask the same questions when we let ourselves settle down enough to ask, like, God, where are you? Why is this happening to me? What are you doing? Or what aren't you doing that I think you should be doing? We ever do that? And so just as they needed encouragement and reminding of who God is and all he had promised them, so do we. This story also just pulls us up to God's greater story of what God has done about the chaos, about what he's done about the brokenness that we see and find in our world. Sally Joy Jones, in her beautiful book, The Jesus Storybook Bible, speaking of stories for kids, they actually had to rebrand this Bible because so many adults were buying it. So they made like an adult version of the same thing. They just gave it a different name and took out some of the funny little pictures, right? But it's the same story because it's a reminder that this whole story is pointing to Jesus, the one who comes to rescue. Sally Lloyd-Jones says, the Bible isn't a book of rules or a book of heroes, although there are some rules in there and there are heroes in there. He says, the Bible is most of all a story. She said, it's an adventure story about a young hero who comes from a far country to win back his lost treasure. It's a love story about a brave prince who leaves his palace, his throne. He leaves everything to rescue the ones he loves. It's like the most wonderful story, wonderful of fairy tales that has come true in real life. You see, the best thing about the story is it is true. The story of the scriptures, it starts with in the beginning God. It's a reminder of who he is. It's his story, the one who created all things, the one who will bring all things to consummation through his son, Jesus. It's a reminder of who he is and what he promises to do about the chaos we find ourselves in. The most important thing about the story is the author. And that's what we see. It says, in the beginning, what's the word? God. In the beginning, God. God is the author of the story. And so what's imperative, what's important for us as we learn about the beginnings of our story in the scriptures, it's imperative that we have the correct focus. So as we look at Genesis 1 through 11, our eyes, our hearts, our minds need to be focused on who it's really about. And the Bible is first and foremost, it's primarily about God. It's about who he is. It's about his beauty, his control, his grace. It's about what he has done and what he promises to do. So as we dive into the story, we often want to make things, surprise, surprise, this is what sin does, about ourselves. And we even can read the Bible through that lens. God, what do I need to do? What do I have to do? How can I fix it? And the Bible is all about God. Who he is, what he does, how he fixes it. Derek Kidner, Old Testament theologian, says it is no accident that God is the subject of the first sentence of the Bible. For you English people, God, the subject. For this word dominates the whole chapter and catches the eye at every point of the page. In chapter one alone, God is referred to 35 times. How many verses are in it? 31. 31 verses. So who is chapter one about? Who's the beginning of everything about? God. It's about God. This passage, indeed the book, is about him first of all. And so to read it with any other primary interest, which is all too possible, is to misread it. So we can want to make the Bible, we can make Genesis 1 about some things other than God, but it's primarily all about him. And what we see over and over and over again is that we see a God who is a creator, who is caring, and who is good. It's just the refrain. It said, and God said, let there be light. And it says there was, and at the end of it, it says that, and God saw that it was good. And God said, and he did something. And it says, and God saw that it was good. So God created everything to reveal that he is a good God. And it just repeats, God said, he created, God saw that it was good. For us, this is a reminder and revealing of the beauty of God. We need to have the right view of who he is. And one of the characteristics, one of the attributes of God is his beauty. That if we look around at all of creation, we see how caring he is, how good he is, how beautiful he is. So we saw that in the parable of the rich fools. And he said, don't be anxious about anything. What did he tell us to do? Look around. And when you look around, you're reminded who God is and you worship him. And the second thing that's going on, there's a lot of things going on, but a second thing that's going on is the author of the story of who God is. It's showing that God is sovereign, that he is powerful, and that he is in control. When he's talking about the light and the water and the big light and the little light and the creatures, the people then and the people now worship these things. They oriented their lives around him. And God said, no, don't worship them. I made them. They're under my power. They're under my control. In a world that worships creation, God reveals piece by piece that he is sovereign over all these things. So we see God as a creator who is good, and he's a sovereign who is powerful. He is in control. And when we understand both those things, we worship him. We trust him. We orient our lives around him. We seek him. We pursue him. We want to know more of him. And it frees us from those things. Then it goes on. He says, in the beginning, God. And then we find the purpose of this story. It says that he created the heavens and the earth. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. In these first two verses, and repeated through chapters 1 through 11, and really all of Scripture, we see this pattern of creation, of fall, of redemption. We'll talk about it as the purpose, the void, and the hope. But we see this pattern. God created all things. Sin happened. If you want to know why your heart is gripped by creation and what is good, it's because God created it. If you want to know why things aren't the way that things ought to be, it's because we've sinned, we turned from God, and it's been cursed. And then why we're so drawn to hope and redemption and being rescued, it's because God does that. That's the story, the purpose of the Scriptures. To allow us to know who God is and what he has done. This idea of creation, fall, redemption. I experienced a picture of it last night as I, again, kind of finishing this stuff up. We are growing and doing the lawn as a family, me and the boys. So this is part of parenting, like you train them to do these things. And so when we moved into our house, lots of beautiful things about our house. The backyard was just desolate. It was just bare. It was like there's a pool and then there's grass, right? And then there was a fence that did have pretty flower boxes on that that I proceeded to. They just kind of rotted off and then never would keep the flowers pretty in them. Okay, so that was it. So we got into, and I'm like, all about the, we read that Andrew Peterson book about gardening and creation and all the good stuff and trees. And so a few years back, we did landscaping in our backyard. We just copied Chrissy, who is our neighbor, and just put up a hedge around it. We made some raised beds, and Alana has these aspirations of like making flower arrangements. She does a great job with that. We made a butterfly garden for Weston because he always likes the creatures and all these things. And so I'm reading Andrew Peterson, and I'm like creation and cultivating and reading Genesis 1 and like all the things. It's awesome, right? Just fast forward a few years, right? We have two dogs. We have three kids. And so I found myself last night, school started, so you're kind of behind on everything and overwhelmed. We usually do it once a week, and so we didn't do it last week, getting ready for school. And I'm back there, and it's like hot, and it's sweaty, and there's like weeds everywhere, and the grass is overgrown, and like all the trees are like just kind of going everywhere. I'm like, man, and so me and the boy, and so I was like, oh, this is the fall. Like, there used to be grass there, and then like 100 lacrosse games have taken place, and now it's just like weeds that like, why do weeds grow faster than grass? What, like, what is that? Right? And so, man, it was just like, and then the pretty little garden with the flowers, like, I was like, oh, that's actually ground cover. That's not like a flower that grows up. And so the ground cover has taken over the raised bed, and just, it's not going well back there. Right? And then Genesis 3, it says, by the sweat of your brow, you will work the ground. It'll be thorns, it'll be thistles. Right? And so I'm like, oh, this is the fall. The apple. This is fall. We have rebelled against ground, and the ground is cursed because of our sin. We are experiencing. I mean, I was a hot, sweaty, disgusting mess. It wasn't awesome. But what do? We went and we're renewing it. We're restoring it. We cut the grass. You should see Will edge. This dude can edge like nobody I've ever seen. Like, I call it like a flat top. Like, dude, it's like straight. It's perfect. He does these chairs. He also does the chairs best of anybody. Frank, no, where's Frank? Frank, you're really good at the chairs too. Maybe he learned from you. He's really good. And so we cut the grass and we got the edge, and Weston's learning how to cut it. Now I'm kind of like hacking back all the big stuff, right? And what's happening? We're redeeming, we're restoring God's creation. This is the story that God does. It was empty. It was void. God filled it with things that were good. Sin destroys it, breaks it, weeds, all the stuff. If that's our lawn and what the world does to our lawn, I was thinking about this as I was ripping out weeds everywhere. What do you think the world does to our hearts? What do you think the world does to our minds? What do you think the sin in us does to us? If this is what just can happen in a yard in Florida in a week and a half, what are the effects of sin that's in us and all around us? It's too much for us to fix. And that's why the story we find ourselves in is a story about God. Because I can go hack it back for a little bit, right? It just comes back. God is restoring. He is renewing. He is redeeming all things. And this is the story, the purpose of the story that we see. It starts with God created. Throughout the Genesis chapter 1, there's these two words that it talks about, create and make. And when you combine those two words is what they're doing in Genesis 1, and it means a fresh start. So it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and earth. It says the earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. There was nothing there. And it says, and then God said, let there be light, and there was light. It says that God is creating. And in the Bible, only God creates anything. God creates everything out of nothing. You can't create something new. There was an Apple podcast that I found myself listening to this on the doodle craze. And all the different breeds and how people are trying to make this perfect breed. And like on and on and on. Like, you can't just like make a dog, right? What are these people doing? They're adapting something that's already made. I'm not knocking them. We got two of them. They're mutts, but they're something. You can't create anything. What he's saying is that God creates everything, and he created it out of nothing. And when it uses this word created, it talks about the most crucial things that we see in the universe. So the first thing we see is that God created the heavens and the earth. God created creation. And then in verse 21, it says that he created life. So God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves. God created life. And the last thing that we see that God created in verse 27 was humanity. It says God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And so in Genesis 1 through 11, what we see and what we will see is both who created all things and why he created all things. Who created all things and why? And this kind of comes in the question of what about like faith and science and all these things? Bruce Waltke, who actually taught at the seminary that I went to and leading like Genesis scholar, he says, the tension between Genesis and modern science regarding the origins of the universe and of species, he says, is largely resolved when it is recognized that the two are speaking from different perspectives. So maybe one of your things is faith and science or God and the age of the earth and all those things. Like maybe that's one of your sticking points or one of your challenges. He says, it's largely resolved when we recognize that the two are speaking from different perspectives. He says, Genesis is concerned about who created them and why. Genesis is concerned about who created all things and why he created all things, not about how they were created and when. The Bible disregards, it doesn't even speak to how and when. He just says what? He did it. He created it. He says science cannot answer the former questions. Science can't answer who created everything and why. And it says, and Genesis is mute about the latter ones. It just doesn't speak to it. Everybody gets caught up in what is the Bible? How old is the earth? How is this? It's like the Bible doesn't try to answer the question. It's not the point. The Bible is concerned with who and why, not how and when. And what we do is we find the why. We find our purpose in the opening pages of the story. Our purpose is to know God, to love God, to worship God, to walk with God, to be about his plans, to be about his purposes for his world. And what we see is these themes start emerging. Derek Kidner said a lot of the themes of Genesis 1 through 11 don't kind of reemerge until the New Testament. He speaks of things like work and marriage. He speaks of the fall of men. He talks about shame and judgment and grace. We'll learn about the pilgrim status of God's people, how we're supposed to navigate the world that we find ourselves in. This is what is covered in Genesis 1 through 11, and this is what picks back up. This is what all the Old Testament points to and is fulfilled in the New Testament. People always talk about like, oh, Jesus never talked about sexuality or gender or anything like that. But he did. Because when they asked Jesus about marriage, what does he do? He quotes Genesis chapter 2. He goes back to what? Creation. It's the foundation. It's the origin of how we're supposed to live, what we're supposed to be about, how God created all things. It's the purpose of the story. So if in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, we quickly see that there was a void in the story. And again, there's different views on how to read this and what it's talking about. But verse 2 says, the earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. And it says, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. There's the void. It says that it was without form and void. The fun word to say is tohu wabohu. Isn't that fun? Fun. Go Google it and let your little computer play it for you. Sounds funny. It means without form and void. And what without form and void is saying, it's used to describe a desolate desert. Where were they? They're in the desert. They were in the wilderness. They were wandering. They were directionless. And this earth, it says, was without form and void. Kent Hughes says that it is a place that was disordered and empty, therefore uninhabitable and uninhabited, the very opposite of what the earth would be after the 6 days of creation. So we see creation was formless and without void. It was disordered. It was empty. And that is the story that happened. But my friend Jamie, who is the pastor from our sending church, he talked about also that it's also a story that continues to happen. Our lives can feel empty. They can feel like they lack meaning. They can lack purpose, right? One of my favorite things is like lots of little kids around Crosspoint, right? Which is awesome. I love it. But sometimes after we raised little kids, like they were just like right in a row for like 6, 7, 8 years. You're just like cleaning up diapers and feeding kids and like, hey, what's going on here? People say like this stuff doesn't matter. It does matter. Or maybe you're in a job and you're like, hey, this job doesn't feel like it matters. Don't feel like I'm doing anything. Don't feel like I'm contributing. Or maybe you're in a stage of life where you feel like I lack meaning, I lack purpose. Our lives can feel like they're empty. And if you don't believe me, then ask, like, why do we try to fill them up with so much stuff? Our lives can feel empty. Our lives can be disordered. We were talking to Callie Beth about how we ended up in Jupiter. And one was to plant this church. And Karina's dad had a desire. He had a passion. He had a dream to plant a church here because he loved this place so much. And he loved the people so much. But he said as he got to know people, it would make him very, very sad because as people would open up and you get to know them better, he would just talk about how their lives were just so disordered. How there was just so much dysfunction. And there would be elements of all good things. Maybe they were passionate about work because they were successful. That's how they ended up here, right? Maybe they're passionate about their hobby or their sports team or an activity they liked. They might have been somewhat passionate about their family. And there's probably some faith dripped in there somewhere. Oh yeah, I believe in God, right? But he said they had all these things, but they weren't in the right order. God was somewhere down low, wasn't a priority, wasn't central, wasn't ultimate. And he says, I know what that was like because that was my life. Very hard worker, great family, believed in God, trusted in God. But he would tell you that work could take over everything, right? And then he heard the gospel in a new way and it changed his life. Somebody invited him to church. Like, hey, you're not going to last doing this. He invited to church. He's like, oh, there's a different way to live. And God became first and center and ultimate. And then work had its right place. And his family had its right place. And his hobbies had its right place. Right? It reordered his life. It reordered his loves. That's what the call is. There is a void that we all have. An emptiness. A disordering of our loves. Jamie shared this quote with me. It's from Donald Miller, and he says, we watch a commercial advertising a new Volvo. Nothing. I know there's some Volvo drivers in here. Volvo's just, they had a famous commercial. That's why he's talking about it. Advertising a new Volvo, and suddenly we feel our life isn't as content as it once was. We can use the Ford F-150 sitting up front that pulls the trailer. Our life doesn't have the new Ford F-150 in it. And the commercial convinces us we will only be content if we have a car with 47 airbags. I'm also not anti like safety. Karina's number one quality of a car is safety. Her dad worked for UPS, just in case you didn't know, all about safety, right? It's like, oh, well, how's it look? I don't care. Is it safe? How's the visibility is all she cares about, right? If we have a car with 47 airbags. And so we can bend our story of buying a Volvo only to repeat the story with a new weed eater and then a new home stereo. Right? So it just moves from one thing to the next. What's the next thing? Literally, Will, the weed eater. Last night, so our weed eater, it's a nice one, but I need to get like service and it's like gas and it's like, it's all rickety and stuff. And so he literally goes to Chrissy, I think you know this. He goes and steals theirs every time he cuts the grass. We got the garage code. He goes in and he came over to me last night. He's like, Dad, I don't know if Mr. Manny got a new battery or what, but this thing is like powerful. This thing is just crushing it. Right? And I'm like, oh, I want a new weed eater. And then I remember the quote I put in the stinking sermon, right? And then in New Home Stereo, it's an older quote. He says, and this can go on and on for a lifetime. And the question we need to ask is, when the credits roll, we wonder what we did with our lives and what was the meaning? What was the purpose? What do we try to fill the void with? What are we doing with the void? What are we trying to fill it with? Where is our life disordered? What are we doing with our lives? It's a question we get at in Genesis 1 through 11. Now, the good news is it doesn't end without form and void and darkness over the face of the deep. How does it end? It says, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. The Spirit of God was hovering. God was coming to redeem, to create, to make things new. We see the pattern of God to work from that which is formless to formed, that which was empty to full. This is what Paul will talk about next week. This is what God does. He takes something that is formless and he forms it. He takes something that's empty and meaningless to full. It says God's Spirit was hovering. It's used in Deuteronomy chapter 32. It's a picture for an eagle that stirs over her nest, that flutters over its young. An eagle comes and goes over its nest, and he is creating. He's protecting. It's a picture of anticipation and care. That's what God is doing over the darkness, over the void, over that which is formless. And it says that the Spirit was hovering. It's the same word for breath or life. And again, this points to God's pattern of creation. Sin has caused darkness and formlessness and emptiness. And then this idea of redemption, this recreation to new life. This is what Jesus came to do. He saw the darkness of the world. Karina will read it in between the third and fourth songs. He saw the darkness in the world. He saw the brokenness of the world. He saw the void of the world, and he came and he took the penalty for sin to redeem us, to rescue us, and ultimately to restore us, to recreate us. This is the gospel message. I've shared this before. My pastor, the first verse I ever memorized, 2 Corinthians 5:17 says, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, what is he? A new creation. God made you new. He didn't like tweak some things, change some things. He made you a new creation. The old has passed away. All the sin, the brokenness, the darkness, the void. He says, behold, the new has come. This is ultimately, again, a pointer to Jesus, who entered the darkness of our world to live for us, who entered the darkness of our sin to die for us. And he conquered it. He was raised to bring new life. Kent Hughes put it this way. He says, just as the Spirit of God fluttered over the dark waters, so does over the dark hearts of humanity, preparing them for the word of God that will make them into new creations in Christ. God created the heavens and the earth, the universe. He can make you new as well. In the beginning was God, and the end God will be. Genesis is about God, the universe, and you. Genesis is about grace. And may his grace abound to you and to me as we study the book of beginnings. That's our prayer. That's our hope. As we look at the book of Genesis, we would have a better, a clearer understanding of who God is, of his grace, of his goodness, who we are as new creations in Christ. It's an invitation to learn the story, to be reminded of God's story, and to be shaped by his story. Let's pray.